Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are only 240 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. It's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, a holiday podcast about holiday movies. Hi, I'm Joseph Wade, your host for this evening. Sitting with me here tonight are my two co-hosts, Johnny Five, the Human Robot.
Present.
And Karen York.
We're also friends.
We are, but you are a co-host, and I want to include you in these things.
Oh, okay.
Like, you're not the perennial guests, you're the actual co-hosts.
Yeah.
And I'm the co-host as well. I'm not like hoarding, you know, the hosting duties. It is what it is. We're all equals here.
Well, I think if people hear us talking on here, they're going to assume we're hosts, right?
I guess. I mean, unless we have a guest, which has happened before.
Yeah. So, our guests are our friends too, though.
That's true. We're all friends here. Friends, hosts, co-hosts, whoever, you know.
Lend me your ears.
I come not to praise Christmas, but to bury it. Yes. Is that what we're doing here? Okay.
That's our new tagline.
We come not to praise Christmas, but to bury it by fucking overdoing it every single episode. Oh, boy.
We just want to run it right into the ground.
I'm sure people are sick of hearing us talk about Christmas by now, but you know what? I don't care.
Well, if they're listening to us talk about Christmas, then apparently they're doing it by choice. So yeah. Fuck them.
If they're 29 episodes deep into Christmas Creeps, I'm sure they're just as nutty as we are. So
fuck all y'all, you
know,
listeners.
What? If that's the case, you know what? We love you and we're happy to have you. Tonight on the podcast, we are discussing, it's Die Hard adjacent. I guess we'll say that.
So, what would you describe your body as?
What? No.
Either of you.
An
instrument of destruction of some sort?
My body is a temple of doom.
Okay.
That's
a movie.
Yeah. Jonathan Five, what about you?
So like Heart Made in Japan, I Am the Modern Man, etc. You know how it goes.
Mm. So Johnny Five is a Styx song.
Yes.
And Miss York, I believe you have, it looks like you have an answer like in the chamber.
I'm not sure, actually. I was trying to think of something good, and I haven't yet. it's a school for a home for wayward kitties.
I set them up, and you forget we're bowling.
Yes.
All right.
You set them up, and I fell asleep.
Well, tonight on the podcast, it's Karen's pick.
Yes.
We don't usually like to you know, say who's chosen what, although we sometimes wind up just doing that. But it was Karen's pick this week. And Karen, what did you choose for us to talk about?
I chose a fantastic movie. I chose Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, yeah. What made you choose Lethal Weapon on our big Christmas Creeps list of potential movies, potential episodes? What jumped out at you about Lethal Weapon?
Well, mostly the fact that it's one of those movies that everybody in the world and their brother has seen, and I haven't. Well, I hadn't until tonight. And so I just wanted to see it.
That's
mostly
good. That's as good a reason as any.
Yeah. You know, I want to, you know, burn through all those modern classics that I've never seen before. So.
Cool. When you chose Lethal Weapon, I was a little, I was surprised, partly because, like, I saw it, the name, and I thought, wait a minute, that's the one about... No, because then I was just thinking of Die Hard.
Yes.
And I realized, oh yeah, I haven't seen Lethal Weapon in a long fucking time.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon is like less good Die Hard.
I mean, it's
different
in a way.
Differently good Die Hard.
Differently good Die Hard. It's differently abled. Lethal Weapon is differently abled Die Hard.
It's special Die Hard.
Oh, that makes it sound damaged in some way.
Well, it kind of is. Did you fucking see Mel Gibson in that movie?
Yeah, he's disturbed. He is a little disturbed.
Like the band? I can't do it, but he does a good impression of it.
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah.
Yeah, yes, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bing.
Oh, so, Yeah, Lethal Weapon, not a lot of people remember that it's even a Christmas movie, but I also feel like nowadays not a lot of people just straight up remember Lethal Weapon.
That's true.
I mean, for my part, I hadn't seen it in maybe a decade.
Yeah.
Like, it's been ages since I've seen Lethal Weapon, so like... When you mentioned it and said, yeah, let's do this for the podcast, I thought, really? Is that a Christmas? I guess so. Yeah, it is. Yep,
it was on the list.
And
then we watched it and,
yeah, well, I mean, we put it on the list for a reason.
But yeah.
Once we started watching it, like, man, the first thing you see in the movie, or hear, rather, is
Jingle Bell Rock.
Jingle Bell Rock. So, like, it just launches you straight into it. So, you know, some movies that we kind of put up on the chopping block for Christmas Creeps only sort of mention Christmas in passing briefly, but I mean, Lethal Weapon is kind of one of them, but it's
yeah,
I would say it's more on the Die Hard spectrum than most.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was kind of like about as Christmassy as Die Hard, yeah, in my opinion. You know,
maybe not as exactly as Christmassy, but like it still uses like Christmas songs and decorations and stuff.
Yeah,
the villain's theme is totally not like a Beethoven piece, which seems important, but you know,
the fucking—you just want to like jump right into the movie.
I do, because like, okay. I don't have anything funny to lead into it.
Well, we keep comparing this to Die Hard. Die Hard came after, right?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about this is that Die Hard came 2 years after. No, just the one. Die Hard came in 88. Lethal Weapon came in 87.
Okay, so they were probably in production.
Yeah, they were probably pretty close. And, you know, they're both, you know, Christmas movies set at Christmas in Los Angeles about cops.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you can totally make the comparison between the two. And you probably should.
Yeah.
Because, like, Die Hard is kind of doing what Lethal Weapon doesn't do.
So, when they came out, was it like the 80s is White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen?
Ooh, that's a good comparison. I mean, I want to say, yeah, because one of them's good and the other's not. But like, no, they're both pretty legit movies.
They are, but there's one that is like a clear winner in my opinion.
Oh, obviously. So. Obviously, yeah. I mean, we could sit here and compare them, Die Hard to Lethal Weapon, all day long, and we might for a few minutes here.
Right.
But yeah, there's kind of no question Die Hard's like the ultimate,
yeah,
non-Pee-wee's Playhouse movie in our
absolutely
in our Christmas pantheon here. So, I guess should we just jump into it and start talking about plot and stuff?
Yeah, just go ahead.
Okay.
And I'll jump in with my dumb observations.
So, Lethal Weapon just straight up starts out with, it like every good CSI episode cop show on CBS, yes, with a death scene.
Right.
A young lady is in her L.A. apartment.
It did kind of start like CSI.
It really, really
did. It's like the pre-credits thing. Mm-hmm. You see how they die, and then, yeah.
Yeah, like if only David Caruso were here to put on his glasses.
Oh, man.
You know, like, this would be the most CBS movie ever.
It's true, but it wasn't in Miami.
Oh, I know.
It's too bad.
But, so yeah, the first thing we see in Lethal Weapon is a young woman snorting a line of what we later learn is heroin.
Yep, yeah.
And then jumping off the balcony of her 20-story apartment.
Yeah, something like that.
To the tune of Jingle Bell Rock.
I mean, if you gotta go.
Which, depending on your mood or whatnot, that's a song that will make you want to do that.
Yes.
I have certain family members who hate that song with a fiery passion and would totally... They would totally feel her pain in that scene.
Not a huge fan of it myself.
It's okay. It's.
I always preferred Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
Yeah.
I think because of Home Alone.
Maybe. A lot of the late 50s, early 60s Christmas songs where they're just kind of tacky and kitschy on purpose, I kind of hate them already.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah,
it gets you in the Christmas spirit, and then someone dies.
Well, she probably didn't feel too much. She was getting high on horse. So.
Yeah, that's true. She was.
She was riding that white horse.
Oh man! But then the next thing we cut to is Sergeant Murtaugh at home with his family.
Right.
And it's his 50th birthday.
It is. He's in the fucking tub.
He's in the bathtub, and his kids surprise him in the tub with is that a birthday cake?
Yeah, yeah. They bring it in and have him blow the candles out.
Oh boy! And so he. Jumping ahead here, he finds out about the suicide
Mm-hmm.
And he has gotten a phone call from an old army friend of his.
Yep.
And he soon learns that the two are related.
Yes.
That the suicide is his daughter.
Right.
And the main thrust of the first act of the movie is Murtaugh trying to find out who caused his friend's daughter to kill herself.
I'd like to jump back, though, to when Murtaugh was in the tub for a moment.
Okay.
When his family's leaving, they all, like, give him, like, his kids all give him a kiss on the cheek and shit. And after his teenage daughter, who's, like, 16, dies, it plays the first instance of this weird, creepy, like, sexy sax sound.
Oh, yeah.
In the movie. The first couple are, like, his daughter.
Yeah, so Lethal Weapon, the score to this movie was done by, I mean, the traditional, like, orchestra score is done by Michael Kamen, who also did Die Hard.
Okay.
I believe. And Eric Clapton.
Really?
Yeah, it was Michael Kamen and Eric Clapton, and you can totally hear it. Like, I don't know that he played the saxophone, but, like, all the, like really scuzzy cop movie kind of guitar music, that's yeah. Eric Clapton.
Oh, shit, okay.
It's the kind of music where you're like, I think this is a movie where Shannon Tweed is investigating some, like, prostitute murders.
Sounds about right.
So it's the kind of music that sounds like it should be on Skinamax.
Yes.
Yes.
It's the kind of music that sounds like it should be its own Skinamax movie. I mean, Eric Clapton was really deep into, was he deep into, like, the cocaine at this point in the 80s?
I don't know. He had the song.
And he had the song, but, like, he had his own problems for a while.
Right.
So I don't know. This could have been like right in the middle of his.
That would have been about the time for it. That would have been like the tail end of the time for it, honestly.
Yeah, like this is Lethal Weapon is getting into that part in the 80s when, like, the 80s are starting to burn out on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell because, like, everyone's kind of depressed and everyone still does drugs even though they clearly hate it.
Right? Yeah. This is just what you do.
Speaking of the drug, yeah, she takes some heroin, but it's when they finally start investigating, which it takes them a good goddamn while in this movie to do some actual fucking police work. One of the first things they find out is that girl was basically dead already because the drugs she snorted were contaminated with.
Yeah, they were
like
drain cleaner or some shit?
Drain cleaner or dish soap or both or something like that.
They were laced with something, some kind of poison.
So if you snort dish soap, it'll kill you?
Yes.
Have you ever seen a plate that's alive?
Check and mate.
You got me there. I mean, I was going to say let's go to the Mythbusters, but...
I mean, we got one right here.
Myth confirmed.
Yeah, fucking watch out, Adam and Jamie.
But yeah, John, you're right. Like, in the whole movie, they do maybe about 10 minutes of actual honest-to-God police work. And
yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned Mel Gibson's character.
I was about to say, let's mention the they that we're talking about.
They, yeah. So early in the movie, Murtaugh, you know, goes back to the precinct, and there's his new partner that he's been assigned, and it's
hair.
It's hair. It's just a big wad of hair with a gun and a badge.
It's GBF Junior. What's his name?
Anyway, what I was saying was we get introduced with two rigs. When he is doing an undercover, like, drug bust, basically.
Yeah, he's on a sting operation at a Christmas tree farm or outlet, you know.
And it immediately goes to hell because he's kind of a psychopath. And he gets into a gunfight, and then the last guy, he disarms him and is basically trying to shoot him. And the other cops have to say, no, you're not allowed to shoot him anymore.
Yeah, he is like a split second away from just blowing this guy away.
Right.
And
then later on we see him, like, try his hardest to commit suicide, but he chickens out.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, another time. Well, no, the other time, fucking, what's-his-face stops him? Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Murtaugh.
Yeah, like, so Martin Riggs is a very troubled individual.
Yes, his wife has recently been killed in a car accident.
She died in a car accident, I think it said, like, 3 years before.
Okay.
84 in season, yeah.
So he's kind of, he's a quote-unquote cop on the edge.
Wait a second. Okay. Never mind. I got my numbers confused for a minute because the character's supposed to be, what, like 37 in this movie?
Yeah, he's like 38, late 30s.
Okay, and it was his wife of 11 years, and she'd been dead for 3 years, so he would have been like 23. Now, for a second, I was thinking of Mel Gibson's actual age when he was filming this movie, and I was like, he was 16 years old when he married his wife.
Mel Gibson was 30 years old when he made this movie.
And his character was 38.
Yeah. But me watching it at home goes, I'm almost 30. I should look like that. But I don't.
Weren't in Nam.
Well,
neither was Mel Gibson.
I'm really sorry to say, Joe, it's because you're losing your hair. I mean, that's all it is.
You fucking did it.
No, it's not that.
But did you see the hair on that guy?
The hair is not the issue. It's the fact that, like, you look at Mel Gibson and you can tell he's seen some shit. I have all this baby fat still stuck to my fucking face, and I don't know how to get rid of it.
Go see some shit.
Okay.
Yeah, go to fucking Nam.
Go see some shit. All right. If that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be. But the fact of the matter is, one of the things we learn about both Riggs and Murtaugh is that they were both in Vietnam. They were both soldiers in Nam. But clearly they were in very different units.
Yes.
Murtaugh, from what I gather, was just a regular old American GI grunt, boots on the ground type of soldier.
Right.
While Riggs was a special forces trained assassin.
Sniper,
yeah. He's he says himself he's one of the 8 best snipers in the world.
Yeah.
Or at least was at one time.
It seems like if you are that, though, you don't, like, talk about yourself like that, you know?
Well, I mean, between cops and friends, I guess.
Between cops and friends. It's my new TV show.
Between cops and friends. You've heard of Cops and Robbers. Well, here's a new twist on it. What if the robbers didn't do anything?
It's my favorite TV show crossover, Between Cops and Friends. So Jennifer Aniston's, like, prostituting herself or something.
Central Perk, 10:45 p.m.
Every week the cops just bust Phoebe for weed.
And there's a lot of blurs. There's a lot of blurs and a lot of beeps.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of found footage, and most of it ends with Chandler going, "What's going on?"
Yeah, exactly. And Joey's, like, trying to buddy-buddy with the cops. You know, he's trying to sweet-talk his way out of shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Ross is probably doing something stupid.
And you know, you straight up know the Rembrandts that are doing a fucking cover of the Cops theme song.
Oh, shit. Yeah, they are.
This, I would watch the fuck out of this show.
I would, too. Let's
make
it.
Between Cops and Friends.
Yeah.
Like the gritty R-rated, the dark and gritty reboot of Friends that nobody was asking for.
But we fucking deserve.
It's not the Netflix sponsored Friends reboot we need right now, but it's the one we deserve.
Oh man!
I mean, you know what? If Full House can come back and just keep on doing its fucking thing,
oh god, yeah.
And if Wet Hot American Summer can get away with just being Wet Hot American Summer, right. I feel like we deserve to have one thing spiral grossly out of control.
Absolutely.
And it feels like that should be Friends.
Yeah.
Like, I know they've mentioned doing a Friends reunion recently, and I don't know whatever happened to that. Not like a full committed show, but like a reunion special or something. And I'm not sure whatever came of that, but man, if there's any 90s sitcom that deserved to just be completely fucked up, it's Friends.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I agree.
And they get the reunion episode, and the only one left is Ross, and he's just like, they all died, they overdosed, and I sold them the stuff.
The only one left is the fucking baby that was born, like, at the end of the show.
Oh, man.
The baby's what, like, 16 now? 17?
The reunion's just going to be the baby and the monkey.
Oh, Jesus, I forgot about the monkey.
I mean, the finale is... at the end of the finale, it's going to turn out that Ross has been staring into a crypt the entire time, and
Jesus.
It's the other 5 friends, and they're just mummies.
Oh my god. Why do they mummify people in New York?
I don't know. Wasn't he like a museum curator or something?
He's an archaeologist, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Who the fuck is an archaeologist?
Indiana Jones.
90s sitcom characters.
Indiana Jones.
Like, who gets a job like that?
Indiana Jones.
Well, yeah, but that was like 1930.
Hey man, it's the 30s.
Yeah.
You can do anything. So yeah, Riggs and Murtaugh were both in Vietnam. Riggs saw a lot more shit than Murtaugh did, and
yeah.
It clearly fucked him up.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of things fucked Riggs up, but Riggs is
dude,
I mean,
is like a
someone...
fucking PTSD or PTSD yeah. case.
Riggs is enlarged to show detail.
Yes, touchdown. But so anyway, I could not remember Murtaugh's name, so they were like the entire movie. They were just Riggs and other Riggs to me.
Roger. Riggs and Black Riggs.
Ugh. You can't go around calling someone Black Riggs.
Sure you can. Why not?
It's Roger and Martin.
You know how Prince's name was Prince Rogers Nelson? Also, by the way, rest in peace, Prince. This is the first episode we've recorded since that news broke.
Prince didn't do a Christmas movie, did he?
Oh, let's just watch Purple Rain anyway.
Okay.
But anyway, you know his name is Prince Rogers Nelson?
Yeah.
What if he's the Rogers and Rogers and Hammerstein?
It wouldn't surprise me a fucking bit to learn that Prince actually is a time machine.
Yeah.
Or had a time machine.
If he did, that means we could see Prince again.
You know what? Now that I think about it, I think the reason Prince died isn't that he OD'd on whatever he OD'd on. I think he was just like 95 goddamn years old. Because
he OD'd on something?
Yeah, didn't he? I don't know.
Well, I didn't hear about that.
Point being, I think Prince spent a lot of that time in the 40s or whenever Rodgers and Hammerstein were doing their thing, composing the best musicals of all time. That's the only logical explanation. He came back and he was 96 goddamn years old.
Probably.
I don't know. If Prince had a time machine, he would just go and try to fuck Joan of Arc or something.
What do you mean, try?
Well, like, he's bad at timing. He's like, okay, I know. He gets there. She's already bringing the stake. He's like, damn, it's not stopped me before.
I mean, the reason they burned her at the stake was probably because, like, nobody believed that she fucked the time traveler. But let's just sully everyone's good name tonight. Riggs has some shit going on. And he spends most of the movie constantly not trying to get himself killed, but, like, putting himself on the edge. In the name of the job, like he says, flat out says to Murtaugh, the only thing not, you know, keeping him above ground is the fact that he's doing his fucking job.
Yeah, they end up getting called in to stop a jumper, and Riggs stops the jumper by jumping off the roof and pulling the guy with him onto the airbag they have set up.
Right. Which
if your goal is to make this guy not dead, you've done it. But if your goal is to make this guy not jump, you've done it. Kind of the exact opposite of that.
I guess. Like, they would have arrested him anyway for you know, disturbing, quote-unquote, disturbing the peace, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the only way that story ends, without him, like, splatting his brains on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think that they would probably take him into custody and put him on a psychiatric hold somewhere. Yeah,
well, sure. Yeah. But, like, the fact remains he's still, like, causing a scene and blocking traffic and, quote-unquote, disturbing the peace. So, like, they would at least book him on that, I would think. I don't know actually what it takes to get to disturb the peace anymore, personally.
a lot.
You have to fucking sit right in the middle of the hallway in the governor's mansion or something to disturb the peace nowadays.
We should do that.
No, we shouldn't.
Fuck our governor.
No, we shouldn't do that either. So they bond over all kinds of shit. They bond over shooting at the shooting range and everything. And they have, like, the weakest bit of exposition while they're at the shooting range, where they try to set up what's going on. They're trying to, like, decide what to do with the case, and the logic they have is that the person who reported the jumper, the first jumper, the dead girl, not the second jumper, the person who reported the dead girl was a prostitute, and she was, like, way off of her normal beat.
Right, she was apparently there at the scene.
Yeah, it's the only reason she would have been at that scene is if she was working there.
Right.
And what they guess is happening is that she was up there with the dead girl, to which Mel Gibson says, disgusting, but okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mel Gibson.
Even in the 80s, Mel Gibson, like, he was, she was showing signs of his later self, even though, like, I don't know if he just ad-libbed that or Shane Black wrote that for him. Whatever.
They decide that if she was there, then most likely she was up there with the girl and she gave her the bad drugs.
Yes. So that's the only lead they have to go on.
Because they killed their first lead. They got, I think they got it from the dead girl's father.
Yeah, yeah.
They got a lead on a drug dealer, and they go over to the house, and they just kind of waltz in and start a gunfight.
They just waltz in, and there are drugs going on. And the dude tries to shoot them, and they kill him.
They try to question him, but they question him with bullets, mainly.
Yeah, and...
Well... They try to question him, but then he fucking pulls a gun and shoots at him, and so they...
Yeah, because they are having an argument where Murtaugh wants to bring people in for questioning, and Riggs just wants to kill everyone.
Yeah, pretty much. So that leads them to the girl, and so they go to the girl's house.
And it explodes.
It goes kablooey.
Yeah.
And then the most awkward exchange in the movie happens, where Riggs and Murtaugh question a bunch of black kids.
Oh yeah.
No, I think you're talking where Riggs and Murtaugh go to Murtaugh's house for dinner.
Well, okay, the second most awkward exchange in the movie.
Oh, that was
where,
the most awkward.
Is where Riggs and Murtaugh question a bunch of black kids, and the black kids are just the kids. They do not want to talk to the cops because one of them says, "My mama said cops kill black people," which even in 1987 is depressing.
Yeah.
And the fact that things have not changed since then is double depressing.
Yeah, double damn it.
But the kids are not very good liars, and their poker face, you know, falls completely. And
yeah, because they're like 7 years old.
And so they corner one of them and start questioning him, and he basically leads them to...
He describes Gary Busey with a tattoo. He says he's pointing to Riggs' arm and says, "It's that tattoo." And Riggs is like, "Yeah, that's my Special Forces tattoo." So
yeah, so
meaning this guy is also Special Forces,
right?
Yeah,
and
so they know that there is some serious shit going on.
And Riggs was also really impressed with the explosive device in the house.
Yeah, again, he says it had to have been Special Forces, which we met Gary Busey earlier in the movie, but we saw him for about 5 seconds, so you probably forgot about it.
Getting his arm burned.
Yeah, his role in the movie up to this point is to intimidate the lower level drug dealers by letting his boss burn his forearm with a lighter.
Yeah.
So you know Gary Busey's crazy.
Absolutely.
This is actually pre-accident Gary Busey, by the way.
Yes, pre-crazy Gary Busey is also still crazy.
Still crazy.
So this leads us to this is where Martin and Riggs Murtaugh and Riggs go home for Christmas dinner.
Martin and Riggs. Is that like his two like personalities? like
Dr. Martin and Mr. Riggs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Kind of. Oh boy.
Yeah, they go to Murtaugh's house for dinner with his family, and Murtaugh's oldest daughter, again, the one who's like 16 or something, Rianne is her name?
I believe so.
Yeah, she's like, "Hey, it's a dick."
Yeah, she's got the hots for Mel Gibson. She's like scoping out his butt and stuff, and
the youngest kids are making the most awkward white guy written rap ever.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It is just like.
Oh, it wasn't even that good.
No, it wasn't.
They were making like, yeah. It was.
Thank you. I didn't realize my beatboxing skills were that advanced.
Well, your beatboxing skills were.
You're better than a 7-year-old. Congratulations.
Yeah. I'm just mostly saying that they were like so bad that they weren't even that good.
But yeah, they basically do the beatboxing version of like,
"My name is blank and I'm here to say."
No, they're doing the beatboxing version of like Rihanna and Rick sitting in a tree, but they're like rapping it.
Yeah, basically.
And then they try to get their dad to do it, and he's just like,
I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. Yeah, he's like blowing raspberries behind his hand. That's apparently how you beatbox.
But no, she is totally giving Mel Gibson the bedroom eyes. And,
yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, whatever.
Right, because he's like three times her age almost.
So then back onto the case.
Well, first, this is kind of a weird, like, I don't know if you really call it like a Chekhov's gun type thing. Because it's just innocuous dialogue that actually has import later. Mm-hmm. They're out fucking around on Murtaugh's boat. They're just out on it just to be drunk. And the boat's in the driveway. They're sitting on it getting drunk.
Yeah.
And doing boat repair. And the daughter comes out, and the oldest daughter, and Murtaugh and his oldest daughter get into an argument about, she's apparently grounded. From context, I would guess she got caught with weed, and that's why she's grounded.
Probably.
Because they have a conversation about where she's mad about, like, if I had a beer, it would have been fine, but, you know, I have grass and I'm grounded. And he's just like, that's, and Murtaugh's response is, that's because it's illegal right now, right or wrong.
Yeah.
And he
says something along the lines of, like, she says something along the lines of, it wasn't even coke or heroin, it was grass.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make it better. When you're a cop's child, that doesn't make it better.
Well, Murtaugh's response is really wishy-washy. It's just like, yeah, well, it's illegal right now, so...
Yeah, but also, yeah. Then he says, like, but beer is, except she's definitely not 21.
No, she's definitely not, like, she's definitely still in high school.
I mean, because the legal drinking age wasn't changed to 21.
It was in, like, the 70s, I think.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, either way, it's still illegal. Either way, he's still a cop.
Yeah.
You're an idiot, kid.
Most teenagers are.
But I guess good for trying.
But the relevant part of dialogue is she complains about wanting to go out with one of her several boyfriends, this one being the blonde one with dimples, she says, which comes up later.
Yeah, so from here we go, is this when we go to the, the friend, like Hunsucker's estate.
I think so, yeah. Because
this is when Murtaugh really finds out kind of what's going on.
Yeah, his bullshit alarm's been kind of set off, and he's like getting the idea that she was killed to get at Hunsucker.
Yeah. So he goes to the source, Hunsucker. And then this is a big like plot bomb that they drop on us. A lot of stuff gets laid out.
Yeah, it's expository time.
So basically, Hunsucker was in the army too. Hunsucker was Murtaugh's army buddy from Vietnam.
Right.
Apparently in Vietnam, he got involved in some very shady drug dealing shit.
With a group called Shadow Company of all fucking things.
Yes.
Yes. I almost said the Shadow Clan. I think I mixed them up in the Foot Clan, maybe.
The Lin Kuei?
Yes.
I wrote this down because I thought it was going to be important, but apparently I was wrong. Okay, anyway.
You wrote it down, but you didn't write it down?
I wrote it down, but apparently I didn't write it down.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, they're basically skimming off the top of like the local drug trade pretty much, and they get deeper involved in it. To where they come back home and they are the drug trade.
Right. So basically it's a bunch of white guys skimming it off a bunch of local Laotian crime groups.
Yeah.
And then bringing it home and selling it in Los Angeles.
Yep.
So not only are they bringing the war home, they're bringing a little bit of something else too.
And where Hunsucker's involvement is in this is that he is an actual legitimate banker.
Yeah, so he's laundering their money.
Yeah, he's laundering their money using his actual real bank, yeah. Mm-hmm. And for his trouble, he gets shot by Gary Busey in a helicopter.
Yeah. In a, I don't want to call it a lovely scene.
It was beautiful.
In a very nicely staged shot where like Gary Busey's outside in a helicopter, shoots him with a sniper rifle through the window, and he's like drinking a carton of eggnog, and it shoots through the carton of eggnog, and the eggnog is just spilling out of the carton.
And And I would also just like to reiterate that he's standing there drinking straight out of a carton of eggnog.
Party nog.
A brand called Party Nog, yes. Of all things.
See, when you pointed that out, I thought one of you guys said Party Dog. Party Dog?
Party Dog, Party Nog is that's the only kind of nog I drink. it's the Cristal of eggnog, okay?
Okay.
it's what the rappers drink. It's what they pour on their cell phones in those music videos.
It's Hennessy Nog.
Do I even want to think about like the Charles Shaw of Nog?
Oh,
maybe not.
It's like that shit that's been like sitting there too long, and it is like it's starting to get rotten. Yeah, it's got like black inside of it.
There was a lot of it there too.
Yeah, there was. I guess was he having like a party?
Stored at room temperature.
It must have been a party because there was a lot of people out on the lawn doing something.
Yeah,
and not reacting at all to Riggs, by the way, who's just wandering around the estate.
So not only are they setting up for a party and have a bunch of like fucking cartons of eggnog from the store sitting out on a table.
Yeah.
But he just like goes and takes one of them, starts drinking out of it. Like, how fucking rude is that, party host?
And to not offer Murtaugh any at all.
Yeah, like it's like he couldn't fucking wait for the shit to get started, so he's just gonna like take from his stash and just.
Yeah, like 50 things are rotten in the state of Denmark here.
Instead of pouring it in a cup, like just drink it straight out, so no one else can have any.
Maybe he knows he's about to be capped. You know.
So he's just gonna
chug some eggnog.
He's just letting like the id take over.
Yeah, it's like what Riggs says to the jumper on the roof, like, hey, let's have a cigarette. Maybe the cancer will kill us if we're here long enough.
Right.
Maybe the cholesterol will just murder him before Gary Busey can shoot him through the chest.
No, he knows that he's going to die, so he's just doing, like, rude and irresponsible things, because who gives a fuck? It doesn't matter anymore.
That's true.
I would guess maybe he's just really fucking nervous from the fact that he's telling a cop, okay, here's about all the drug trade I'm involved in.
That too, yeah.
The cop's not going to kill him. He's white and has a lot of money.
And also apparently owes him, quote unquote.
Oh, whatever.
So Hunsucker says to Murtaugh that you owe me. But yeah. What does he owe him? I didn't catch that.
He saved his life in Vietnam.
Oh, okay. I mean, I could probably get a guess, but I don't think he ever like laid out like, I took a bullet for you, man. But I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think he just fucking saved him.
So, yeah, Gary Busey shows up and shoots Hunsucker through the chest and flies off.
And talks on a cell phone.
Talks on a cell phone to, forget the actor's name, but it's his boss.
His boss.
It's the grandpa from Dharma and Greg.
What a random point of reference.
Yeah, my 90s sitcom pull is strong.
Someone actually watched Dharma and Greg?
This guy.
Damn.
What were the names of the dogs on Dharma and Greg?
butt and hole. I don't know.
I don't know why I remember this. They're Stinky and Nunzio.
I was kind of
close.
Wow. Okay.
Butt and hole.
You know what? It's a Chuck Lorre show. I probably could have guessed that in two or three tries.
Speaking of connections, there's diehards in this movie, though.
Oh, there are diehards. Special Agent Johnson works at the police station.
Mm-hmm.
And Oli is a random henchman.
Yeah, he's one of Miss Gary Busey's henchmen. Gary Busey is named Mr. Joshua for some reason.
Mr. Joshua.
That seems important, but I don't think it is.
That's like what they do in fucking preschool with little kids. That's what they tell them to call teachers.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Miss Tammy and Mr. Joshua.
It's the name of a camp counselor.
Yes. For really young kids.
It's the name of a camp counselor, not a trained murderer.
He's the assassin with a heart of gold. He's great with children.
Black gold.
Yeah, so they have a little bit of a gunfight.
At what point in the movie are we again?
Right after the gunfight between Helicopter Busey and Mel Gibson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then...
Then he gets on his phone and tells his boss, like, oh yeah, some cops totally saw me, sorry. Bye. And his boss is like, yeah, you should probably kill the cops, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, just possibly.
And so then they're out, like, they're out of leads at this point, because all their leads are dead, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So they start just questioning random hookers, like, hey, do you know this girl? Do you know where her pimp is?
That's right.
And then Gary Busey totally shows up and shoots Mel Gibson with a shotgun and then drives off.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel Gibson is like, well, I was wearing a bulletproof vest because of course I was. And now they think I'm dead, so cool.
Yeah.
The one moment I actually feared for my life, boy, am I glad I put that vest on. So Mel Gibson assumes that they think he's dead.
Which is true. They do think he's dead.
Which is true. So he goes after them.
Yes. And so...
And then at that point, they get a... Well, they're still trying to fix all of this. They get a call and about... Oh, yeah, there's a dead body found like 2 blocks from your house, Murtaugh. It's a blonde kid with dimples.
Dun, dun, dun.
So they drive back and completely ignore the blonde kid with dimples.
Which was
You never see that kid. You never see that kid.
Well, and it's his daughter's boyfriend.
It's his daughter's boyfriend.
Yeah, so they immediately burst in the front door of his house, guns drawn, and find a letter. Then his family comes downstairs like, yeah, we were asleep. What's going on?
And it's a letter that says that Murtaugh's daughter, his oldest daughter, has been kidnapped.
Yes.
And if he wants to see her alive again, he will hand himself over to them?
Yeah, so here's the thing that I wanted to talk about. The reason they want him to hand himself over is that presumably he's the only person that knows about this plan now, right?
Yeah, because they think Briggs is dead.
Right, and so they want to contain, like, the plan. What is to stop him from just fucking telling his cop friends that he works with that, you know, what's going on?
Presumably, if we kidnapped your daughter, we know where the rest of your family is, too, so...
True.
Right, but what's to stop him from telling them and them just keeping it on the DL until he can get, like, his daughter back and get his family secure? And just pretending that nobody knew about it.
Hey, Shane Black, if you're listening, get back to us, please.
Yeah.
Like,
we're going to pull this thread for a minute.
let's just unravel the entire fucking movie right now.
Because basically, all they want is him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because they're going to take him and fucking, you know, probably kill him or something as soon as they wanted to find out what he knew, first of all.
Which, like, as it turns out, was everything.
Right.
So that would definitely get him killed.
Yes. But there's, like, all this time in between him turning himself over and, you know, where he could have just, like, told dispatch, like, hey, guys, this is what's going on. So if I die, here's this information.
Yeah, go get these guys.
Yeah.
And he very well could have, because Briggs is definitely in on it.
Right. I'm just saying, like, on the part of, like, the bad guys, like, how stupid are they? Like, what are they?
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because either way they get Riggs, or they don't, and they just get to make him suffer by killing his daughter. Or, like, what is their end game exactly? Like, if they kill him, the cops come after them. If they kill her, the cops come after them.
Right.
I don't know.
And there's nothing to stop him from telling the cops, you know, the other cops what's up. And, hang back until we can secure people and then fucking come in guns blazing.
You know, they say a good villain is the hero of his own story.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true here. I really don't.
They're really shitty villains. They're kind of stupid.
Gary Busey just wants to kill things.
Yeah. One of the fucking dealers in the beginning of the movie, the one that doesn't die, that Mel Gibson wants to kill is fucking Anthony Kiedis' dad.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything.
What was his stage name?
Crunchy Bodash. I don't know.
Yeah, Blackie Damn It.
Blackie
Damn It.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, the characters in this movie, aside from Riggs and Murtaugh, are very thinly written. Just go ahead and say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Most
of them aren't really characters. I think the only villain that could be construed as a character is not even Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Probably Hunsucker. Like he's like two scenes are the only like sort of legitimate villain.
Yeah.
And he's not even a villain. He's kind of a mook, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not even upset about that. Like, honestly, I just wanted to pick at it a little bit. But I mean, clearly it's a fucking action movie and the characters are secondary to the like explosions and gunfire.
But when you start to pick at it, you realize like, yeah, maybe they didn't write these very well.
Yeah.
Like, either because they didn't feel like it or just because they didn't.
Yeah.
So it's either on purpose or it's not, and I think it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other here.
Right.
Like, they tried to make Gary Busey's character seem threatening and dangerous because the less you know about him, the creepier he is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, they underwrote him so much that there's kind of nothing there.
Yeah. And, I mean, let's be honest, Alan Rickman would have been a way better villain.
Again, Shane Black, if you're listening, get back to us.
Yeah, for real. So to move this thing along.
Yeah, they decide to have a meeting in the desert for like a hostage exchange, basically.
Yeah.
And Mel Gibson is hiding in the bushes with a sniper rifle. They all start having a big old gunfight because Murtaugh has a grenade.
Yeah, he pulled a grenade out, I guess, out of the armory, I assume, because he's a cop.
That's where Brick Tamlin got his grenade from.
Yeah, I don't know. And in the ensuing firefight, Riggs snipes a bunch of these dudes.
Murtaugh gets shot in the shoulder. The daughter tries to escape but fails.
Yeah, because they chase her. She's in a limo and they chase her in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And scissors.
Yeah, they shoot Riggs in the arm and he surrenders after killing about a dozen more mooks. And then Riggs gets
They shot Murtaugh in the arm.
Yeah.
They shot Riggs in the arm and then other Riggs gets ambushed.
Then the two of them get tortured like crazy.
By Al Leong.
Yeah.
By Al Leong, yeah. That guy in all the 80s movies. I always feel bad about characterizing
when they
guys.
Need that Asian thug guy.
When you need that Asian thug guy, you call Al Leong.
He is Bob Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Hang on.
Try that again.
He is Bob Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Perfect.
He is the candy bar guy in Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he is like Asian henchman number one.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Sven Ole Thorsen is like henchman two in every single Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which he's in this movie, from what I remember, as just a random...
I didn't even notice him.
He's credited
like
as
cannon fodder?
He's credited as mercenary, yeah.
Yeah, okay. He was probably in that shootout in the desert.
Probably.
But yeah, they torture Riggs by like electrocuting the fuck out of him.
Yeah,
with
a weird sponge thing,
with like a car battery and a sponge.
Yeah,
in a shower.
Yeah, yeah. There's water coming down on him.
And then they torture Murtaugh by like literally rubbing salt in his gun wound.
Yeah.
But they break out soon enough into a nightclub.
Yeah, they shoot their way out. And apparently, they're in the back room or basement of a nightclub of all places.
And it looks like the nightclub from The Terminator.
It's like couple skate time. They have like the colored lights going around and around.
Yeah, I kind of love like 80s like nightclubs and 80s movies because they all have the same look of like they're stuck between like
it's like post disco.
It's like post disco, but like pre like neon 90s.
Yeah,
where like it's all like the neon lighting, but it's also like the disco ball.
It looks
like skating rink.
Yeah, I was gonna say it looks like a skating rink, like when they do like couple skate.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when they turn the lights down and turn the disco ball on.
It's like back in the 80s, like everybody had that weird 50s like kitsch fetish or something.
Yeah,
and like even though it was like half disco, it was still like had that same aesthetic. I don't know.
It's like post-war disco.
It's the same thing with this movie where like it's a Christmas movie, so there's Christmas lights everywhere, which gives it that extra like little bit of like twinkling ambiance, and I just kind of love that.
Right.
And so they go into the nightclub, and it's the same thing, except it's not Christmas lights; it's like neon and disco balls.
Yeah.
I wish there was more of that in this movie, to be honest.
I wish there was more of that in this life.
Like I wish more movies looked like the inside of a teenage girl's college dorm room. where they all have
that sounds like some weird wish fulfillment
where
shit.
Like the, everything is just like lined in Christmas lights and
oh
dark.
Oh my god. You got fucking fairy lights everywhere. That's what they call them now, is fairy
they
lights.
Call them fairy lights.
If you're not using them during Christmas time, yeah, people call them fairy lights. It's basically just fucking...
That's some old bullshit. I'm going to call that bullshit.
Let me just Google this to make sure I'm using this right.
Okay, I have never heard that.
Let's see.
Source of 2005, when Christmas tree lights were like a dime a dozen on a store shelf. Hell, they were always a dime a dozen on a store shelf.
Just Google image this shit.
But basically, so... Riggs gives chase on foot to the crime boss.
Yeah.
And Murtaugh... also gives chase on foot, but kind of like goes down a back alley and magically finds the right one.
Mr. Joshua runs off in the car and gets into a bit of a fight with Riggs.
Mm-hmm.
He manages to he wrecks the fuck out of his car, then escapes in another car while Mel Gibson gets hit by a taxi. They're just on the middle of the freeway in the middle of this gunfight, and the freeway is just more annoyed that the traffic's being slowed down slightly than they are about the fact that there's a car on fire. And also the car has crashed into a pole and took out a pole. Probably there's power lines on the road.
Yeah.
And also these two guys are having a gunfight in the middle of the fucking road.
But you know what? It's Los Angeles, so that kind of sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to be that cliche, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, that cliche is actually true, though. So
That's a lot of this movie, actually. Like, I feel like nowadays watching Lethal Weapon, like, you look at it and go, oh, God, it's so cliche. But I feel like a lot of those cliches started here.
Yeah.
Especially like the really like scuzzy jazz saxophone going on.
Yeah, and that fucking fat bass. Oh, like
yeah. Like I don't know if it actually started with Lethal Weapon, but Lethal Weapon's the one that like apparently did it the best.
What big action movies like this were there before Lethal Weapon?
Well, I mean, you had like the Schwarzenegger movies, like Commando and The Terminator, but those weren't like cop movies. You had Dirty Harry.
Yeah, if you want to talk about like buddy cop movies, I would call Dirty Harry one of the first like buddy cop movies. But like Lethal Weapon is one of the first things where buddy cop became like the genre.
Yeah, it became the thing.
Because like, I mean, he had a partner in Dirty Harry, but it was more so that there was someone else he could talk to and exposition at for a while.
It wasn't like character one, character two. It was yeah. So I think Lethal Weapon was like the legitimate start of like the buddy cop movie genre, and that kind of that whole like dirty I don't want to call it dirty sax, but I do.
It is
like dirty saxophone sound, like just kind of filtered down eventually through into like now it's just every CSI show on TV.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like all of that shit started with Lethal Weapon, and it's just so hackneyed and like stock now because everybody's been copying it since then.
Yeah, I mean, I laughed and made fun of it, like, every time that saxophone, you know, happened. Yeah. And we were, like, wondering if it was because it's so hackneyed now or if it really was just that cheesy even back then, you know?
It might have been a little bit of both.
I was a baby when this movie came out, so I wouldn't know.
Like, the movie I kept thinking about when I was watching this was Ace Ventura, for some reason. Partly because the music is totally 100% the same. But, like, the plot's kind of the same unless you take out the dolphin. And, like, the whole, like, that all the chase scenes and weird, like, violence is very dirty, is very Lethal Weapon in Ace Ventura.
So Ace Ventura is just a parody of Lethal Weapon, then?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's Martin and Riggs together, and I'm sure he's been on the job long enough that he probably doesn't want to do it anymore.
Christ, I'm too old for this shit. Three times, right? He said that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Murtaugh says, I'm too getting too old for this shit. A grand total.
No, he says, I'm too old for this shit.
Too old for this shit.
Then later, in the sequels, it becomes, I'm getting too old for this shit.
So,
which he's not really that old. He's 50, which, yeah, he's been on the force for 20 years. And I guess this was back in the 80s when you could just retire after 20 years and that was the end of it.
Yeah, but nowadays, you're not allowed to retire until you're like 75. So
at least.
So you may be too old for this shit, but you're gonna do the job.
Sorry, millennials, you get to retire like 4 weeks after you die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Gotta cover those funeral expenses.
Good luck. We'll be here waiting.
Oh, by the way, I looked up fairy lights, and they're very similar to Christmas lights. It's basically Christmas lights in different shapes and things. It's what you use for, like, outdoor shit.
Oh, okay.
So.
Or I thought you were talking about those lights in a tube that you see up in every dorm room.
There are those, too.
No, those are just Christmas lights that you stick in, like, a...
like a different bulb.
Like a tube.
Yeah.
No, but I thought they had those had a specific name because you always oversee those in dorms.
Yeah, I think I guess
that's gonna be my next Google.
Like, there's like another the other big thing is to like cram a bunch of Christmas tree lights in a like a mason jar and then plug it in.
That seems like a fire hazard.
Fuck mason jars.
It kind of does. Maybe that's just because we live in the South and that's the that thing they do here. I don't know. Our way to the
mason jars are to the South as putting a bird on it is to Portland.
Pretty much. Google redneck wine glass.
No, please don't. So let's kind of kill
this
bad guys off here. We are all beside the end of the movie, actually.
We're getting there. Like,
Murtaugh just stumbles down an alley where they happen, where the general or whatever happens to be trying to escape. He shoots them.
He shoots the driver or the
driver,
car.
And the car, flips the fuck out of control.
The car, careens into traffic where a bus crashes into it. And then that car flips over. Turns out that car has a bunch of grenades and shit in it.
Grenades and cocaine, pretty much, or heroin or whatever.
And the general blows the fuck up.
It seems like he intentionally blows himself the fuck up, too.
Almost. Just to get away.
Yeah.
And for just a split second, it seems like the movie's over. Like, everything's good. The villain is dead. Riggs and Murtaugh are having their kind of buddy-buddy moment.
Yeah, then Riggs is like, oh, yeah, by the way, I didn't kill Mr. Joshua, and he still knows where you live.
And we're off to the finale.
Yes.
Where Mr. Joshua has invaded Murtaugh's house, but they're ready for him. And
they're not really ready for him as much as they have his family has evacuated the house.
Well, they're out, but he finds a sign on the Christmas tree that says, like, hi, bad guys. You know, it's just us good guys here.
Well, but before that, he fucking tells the TV it's goddamn Christmas because, like, Looney Tunes is on or something. Looney Tunes is on a lot in this.
Looney Tunes movie. And Family Feud.
Looney Tunes and Family Feud and A Christmas Carol are the only TV shows we see. When Mr. Blonde, not Mr. Blonde.
Is this Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, he's gonna, yeah. Whoops.
That's got good music in it, too.
He's blonde. I'm forgiven for saying these
only
things.
Only Jesus can forgive you.
Okay. Dear Jesus, forgive me for confusing Gary Busey with Michael Madsen.
Father, please forgive me for I've sinned.
Oh, baby. No, on TV, it's A Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim playing. And it's the scene at the end of the story where he's asking the boy, you know, what day is it? You know, hey, child, you there, what day is it?
Yes.
And Gary Busey fucking goes, it's fucking, what was it?
It's goddamn Christmas.
Goddamn Christmas. And he fucking shoots the TV.
I mean, that was unnecessary, Gary Busey.
Then he finds the note on the Christmas tree that says, hi, bad guys, it's just us good guys here. And then a cop car crashes through the window.
Yes.
Mel Gibson pulls him out of the house. And all the police show up for this final confrontation, and they want to just duke it out. Mano.
Yeah, Mel Gibson fucking disarms him, you know.
It's like a fucking like high school fight where Murtaugh is just like, just let him fight it out, just let him fight it out, nobody to fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they end up having like a total, like, this is something you saw in 80s movies quite a bit, that just for the sight of the times, it doesn't happen very much anymore, of like, people from Vietnam having a fucking Vietnam-related score to settle.
Right.
And they, like, take it out each other in, like, special ops, like, just hand-to-hand
fucking
combat.
Beat down.
Yeah, they both use their special training on each other, and it's brutal. Like,
yes.
Like, a cop car crashes into a fire hydrant, so there's like, water and mud everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, smashing each other's faces into the ground.
Yeah, he fucking tries, Gary Busey tries to drown Mel Gibson in half an inch of water.
Yeah, and he almost does.
Oof. Oh, Jesus.
But Mel Gibson gets the better of him, and it looks like the fight's over.
Yeah.
Then, no, they don't pull a Die Hard. Die Hard pulls a Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
Yeah, what happens is the two other cops come over to arrest Mr. Joshua, and he, like, shakes himself free and grabs one gun off of them. And then so Riggs and Murtaugh both pull out their guns and simultaneously just blast the fuck out of Mr. Joshua.
Which, if you ask me, is a way better moment than the end of Die Hard, I think.
Yeah.
It's like the moment where, like, the buddy cop team kind of solidifies and, like, they're, like, on the same page.
Well, even, like, visually, like, they do the camera shot afterward, and they're both standing
they're doing their
gun thing. Like, they're standing super close together, their arms are, like, right parallel to each other. Yeah.
It's too good.
It's
too good. But yeah, that's the end of the movie, and then we go out on Riggs and Murtaugh going back to Murtaugh's house for Christmas dinner.
Right.
Not just dinner, but Christmas dinner. And what's the song that's playing over the end credits? The one that's not just the Lethal Weapon theme song?
I can't remember what Christmas song it was.
I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Which is a lovely note to go out on because it's very old school and old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And this feels like a very kind of old-fashioned Hollywood cop movie nowadays.
Yeah.
Back then, I'm sure it was fresh and brand new. But then, you know, a year later, Die Hard sort of kicked it in its ass.
Yeah. Also, of note in this movie, Murtaugh's wife is played by the woman who sings the Christmas song.
Yeah, it's just called Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas.
It's Darlene Love, yeah.
Yeah, that you might hear in Gremlins or various other places all around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. So that was a nice pull. Like, there's not a whole lot of Christmas in this movie, but what's in there, like, really fits and really works for the movie.
Yeah, you know, Mel Gibson's character is, like, really depressed because it's the holidays. He's living in an RV and... You know, watching, like, Looney Tunes on the TV by himself.
Yeah, he's watching, like, the Bugs Bunny version of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. And, you know, you just feel very sad for him because he's very lonely.
And, yeah, and that's, like, one of the only moments in the film where you kind of get the notion of, like, you know, loneliness around the holidays. And or even just the fact that it's at around the holidays because the movie's set in Los Angeles and you really don't see a whole lot of Christmas stuff in the movie. Like, there's a scene where... Riggs is chasing a car down the street, down like a main thoroughfare in Los Angeles, and you see like the Christmas decorations on the power
lines.
Yeah, like
the like scroll work and stuff like hanging over the streets.
But for the most part, this movie kind of ignores Christmas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of around and it's set there. And I feel like of all the movies we've discussed so far, this is the one that has the least to do with Christmas.
Yeah.
But it uses Christmas kind of the way that Die Hard does, but not so forcefully.
Yeah. Die Hard, in my opinion, Die Hard uses Christmas a little better. Mm-hmm. It more integrates it. Like, Die Hard is a story that feels weird without Christmas. Lethal Weapon, exactly. You could do without Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the story of Die Hard is basically, like, it relies on it being Christmas and them having the Christmas party and everything.
Yeah. Like we said before in the Die Hard episode, you could change Die Hard around and have the script not have Christmas in it. It would require some pretty substantial rewrites, and there would be some weird things that wouldn't make sense very much, except for the fact it's Christmas. Like, why are you going to have all these people at the building when no one else is there unless it's a Christmas party on Christmas Eve? Mm-hmm. Lethal Weapon, you could take out the Christmas, and you wouldn't have to do too much else to the script.
Yeah, this could very well take place on, like, the 4th of July. I mean, as much as this deals with, like, Vietnam and, like, war veterans, like, that almost makes more sense.
Or, like, Veterans Day or something, or Memorial Day.
Like, any holiday, like if you had draped this movie in American flags, this would be, like, the quintessential Independence Day movie until Independence Day came out.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
No.
Which seems odd. I think it's because, like...
Maybe he just didn't want to be, like, too...
I mean, Shane Black loves Christmas is what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's... I mean, what we'll eventually learn is that Shane Black just has a hard-on for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know...
There's this, there's Iron Man 3, there's Long Kiss Goodnight, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang...
I think The Last Boy Scout, I'm not sure, but yeah, like, most of the movies he's written, either written or directed, like, involve Christmas in some way, shape, or form. Some more than others. But we'll
burn that bridge when we cross it.
We'll certainly burn that bridge when we get to it, because I totally want to.
Yeah.
Because he does do it more in, I think, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang than he does here in Lethal Weapon. But, yeah, this is it's a thing for Shane Black to sort of hang his to decorate his movie with, basically.
Right.
I don't know. Shane Black didn't direct Lethal Weapon. Richard Donner did, who directed, you know, The Omen and Superman and The Goonies.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Richard Donner did this one, and I think he did the other three Lethal Weapons as well, at least number two. But yeah, this movie, like I said, it feels like a very old fashioned. Nowadays, at least, kind of take on, like, the cop movie that Die Hard sort of doesn't. Even though Die Hard has more of a cowboy thing going on, this movie is much more of a, like, a macho, rah-rah, war hero kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because, they don't really go into it too deep, but, like, there's a lot of Vietnam in Lethal Weapon.
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, three or four of the main characters are, like, Vietnam vets. And it's, like John mentioned, it's about sort of bringing the war home and finishing the fight that they couldn't finish, you know, yeah. a decade before.
Which, you know, we might start seeing more of that shit again, because that was about 15 years or so after that whole deal. And we're getting to around the same time period after Iraq. So,
yeah, that's not a bad,
you know,
comparison, actually. Like, I think I can't think of any movies off the top of my head now that really deal with, like, soldiers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. I know there are. I know they exist. Yeah. Like, the Hurt Locker is the first one I think of, but that's still, like, very much a...
Very new.
In the middle of things kind of war movie.
Like, right.
If the Hurt Locker had taken place entirely, like, in the grocery store at the end of that movie,
yeah.
that'd be a different story.
Yeah, basically, we're going to have to, you know, start seeing movies with people our age mm-hmm. and as the main characters, as these cop characters, you know?
It's going to be a Channing Tatum movie.
Oh, yeah, it totally will be.
It will be. I think he's even made some Iraq War movies already.
Probably.
G.I. Joe.
What's that one that's...
G.I. Joe 2.
The thought escaped me.
Okay.
Stop Loss.
Stopwatch.
That's the one. No. Stop Loss is the movie where, like, he's a veteran of the Iraq War
mm-hmm.
or the Afghanistan War. I can't remember. And he's trying to, like, escape being re-upped for duty.
Okay.
It's not a very good movie, but...
Does Channing Tatum do serious movies? Or
yeah, that was one of them.
Okay, that was one of them.
It popped into my head when you said Jarhead and then Escape Me. There's another Iraq War movie.
I didn't say Jarhead.
Hurt Locker, no. It wasn't Jarhead either, but there's another one.
Fuck. White House Down was pretty good, though. That's not a war movie.
The thing is, though, is like it's kind of different with Vietnam, because we were A-OK with portraying like returning soldiers from Vietnam as just... crazy evil psychopaths.
Yeah, they're all crazy. That's true.
Yeah. And, yeah, I guess we're like, a little more on it with trying to help out people with PTSD like now.
The three that I think of at the, off the top of my head are Riggs.
Okay.
Rambo. Like, he clearly goes crazy in that first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely the others. And then what's his name? The villain from The Karate Kid. The Karate Kid.
Oh, I was going to say Gene from One Hot American Summer.
Oh, okay. That works.
Fucking sure. Christopher Maloney.
Yeah, sure.
He plays some weird characters in movies.
He does. And he's also like one of those guys who like straight up does cop shows.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's on fucking SVU. And then he played in fucking White Castle. Harold and Kumar.
Yeah, he did.
White Castle.
Oh, man. I like actors who can go back and forth between like serious stuff like that and
I do too.
Goofy shit. Like Michael Shannon from The Night Before. Like he's in some serious hardcore movies, but like mm-hmm. he does not have any qualms about getting silly.
Right, yeah. You know? And like I was saying on the last episode, he's in Boardwalk Empire and plays mm-hmm. a pretty serious character in that.
Right. It's fun when actors go against type.
Yeah. Or when they just don't have a type.
This has nothing to do with Christmas, by the way. I'm thinking about The Karate Kid now and like as I want to do, I think about The Karate Kid from time to time.
Yes.
And it's always struck me as weird that like a bunch of the Cobra Kai kids look like Star Wars characters.
Uh-huh.
Like not Johnny, but like one of Johnny's goons is like a dead ringer for Mark Hamill.
Really?
The coach is a dead ringer for Harrison Ford.
Jesus.
It's just like, okay, so Star Wars came out, like, in, you know, Return of the Jedi came out in 83, and, it, like, Star Wars was still, like, the new hotness, and they're making this Karate Kid movie for the kids, and they're like, okay, well, what do the kids love? Star Wars. Let's put a bunch of actors that look like actors in Star Wars in our Karate Kid movie.
Oh, my God.
That will make this movie popular. But apparently it worked. The fucked up thing is it worked.
Jesus. You know, I've never seen The Karate Kid, but just, I don't know, talking about the bad guy, like Cobra Kai and everything, it just made me think of on fucking Red Letter Media's Wheel of the Worst that they do, where they watch like those awful videos and things.
Oh, yeah.
There's this one video about, it was like karate safety shit or something. You know what I'm talking about? Like all these kids get chased into a cage.
Yeah, it was the ninja training video. Yeah,
that one, ninja training.
I don't know this one.
Where, first off, the logo is just totally trying to like rip off the Ninja Turtles logo.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's like a bunch of kids like are getting chased by bullies. It's like basically both the bullies and the kids are totally United Colors of Benetton ads. It's just like the most racial diverse. And gender diverse bullies and bullies ever.
Yes.
And they like run into a random cave or something and then get ninja training.
Yeah, it's so fucking bizarre. But for some reason, talking about the Karate Kid just makes me think of that.
Here, tell me this does not look like Harrison Ford's porn star stunt double.
He kind of does. He looks like a thicker version of Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Ford's like a leaner dude, I think.
I've always thought that about that movie, though.
That's what Kylo Ren would look like if he listened to better music.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
Emo Ren.
All right, so let's wrap this thing up, guys. Lethal Weapon. Final thoughts on Lethal Weapon here.
Not super Christmassy.
Not really. It's in there, but it's not like... Maybe one or two.
Yeah,
I'd say two because it does enough with it.
Yeah, they use some decent music, yeah. It's both acknowledged by characters and by the scenery that it is in fact Christmas.
Right, it's not just decoration. It is definitely like a part of.
It's not just you see a calendar once and it says today is December 25th.
Mm-hmm. Like Riggs is definitely like half of the reason Riggs is depressed in that one scene is because it's Christmas and his wife is gone. Like right. That's. It's written into the story, but not enough, basically.
Yeah.
So one or two, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say two. And then how much did we enjoy this movie? How good is Lethal Weapon?
Well, it's not really good, but I liked it.
It's
a good action movie.
It's pretty good.
Basically, when I say it's not good, I'm like we were talking about the writing's a little thin in places. Yeah, but...
and we're comparing it to Die Hard. So yeah,
that's a hard comparison.
Feel just fine giving it a 3. I don't know about a 4.
Yeah.
I'm for our purposes, I'm going to go ahead and say that I agree. A 3 is probably...
That's kind of what I was thinking, too. Mm-hmm. Because I liked it. It was a fun movie to watch.
Yeah, totally.
So, and now I've seen Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
And, like, I am not against watching Lethal Weapon 2 for this podcast. I do not know if it's Christmassy at all.
We'll find out.
But
you just want to talk about Danny Glover on a bomb toilet, don't you?
You know me too well. Oh, man. Any parting thoughts for Lethal Weapon? Would you watch this at Christmas?
Yes. And also the entire time I'm going to watch it and just think Danny Glover is Mr. from The Color Purple.
It puts a new shade on that movie, doesn't it?
It really does. A purple one.
Also, did you? Oh,
sorry.
Did you notice that like one of the first things that someone tells him in this movie is that he looked better with a beard? There's that whole scene in The Color Purple where like is it Whoopi Goldberg is like shaving his face on that porch and she like so wants to like just cut him. And then in Lethal Weapon, someone says, "Hey, you look better with a beard."
I missed that. That's pretty good. Whether it's a reference or not.
I don't think it is, but it
yeah.
Think about that.
That's a nice connection to make.
It's a horrible connection to make.
Color Purple was rough. It was a really good movie.
So here's something that's a complete tangent, but this is totally a true thing. You know about how like referencing like out-of-universe references, like they're totally referencing, if it is an actual reference, they're referencing the fact that Danny Glover played a character in another movie?
Right, yeah.
That shit is like older than fucking movies. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's Shakespeare's
like, yeah,
type shit.
Yeah, it's like Shakespearean.
Like, there's a joke in Romeo and Juliet about how the grave... It was in Hamlet. About how the gravedigger played another character in one of the other plays. Like, it's a joke that you only know if you know both these plays and know that the actor who originally played the gravedigger played it a character in the other play.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
It's been going on for hundreds of years, and the most recent version of that I just watched today... There was an one in the new season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. There's a mm-hmm. joke about how the cult leader once told the girls that he invented the buy the world of Coke scheme.
Oh, of course he did.
Because it's John Hamm.
Yeah. No. Yep, it sure is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Lethal Weapon, pretty good. Not all that Christmassy, but pretty good.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where we won't know until we just watch it and talk about
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, it's a solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy it.
Good stuff. So that's going to do it for this episode of Christmas Creeps. If you have any suggestions, questions, and or comments for us, please email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Find us on the web on Twitter at
Christmas Creeps.
At Christmas Creeps. Sometimes I forget. go to Facebook and find us. We're, just search Christmas Creeps. You'll find us right away. We're the skull with the Candy King crossbones. You can't miss us. And finally, if you enjoy this show at all, please tell a friend. Please send them to our iTunes link and get them to subscribe and to download all of our episodes at once. That seems to be a fun thing that people are doing on our page now, and I don't understand why.
But we'll take it.
We'll take it, yeah. If you want to download all almost 30 episodes of Christmas Creeps for a road trip or something, hey, we are not going to stop you. That's what we're here for.
We're sorry.
I will stop you and try to make you take a flight instead, but yeah, that's about it.
Bad call, road trips. But hey, seriously, leave us some feedback.
We would love some feedback, yes. Yeah. So get at us, tell us how we're doing, tell us what you want to see. We will do our best to make that happen.
Yeah.
But until then, next time we see you, actually no, we will. I am calling our shot now, like we did once before. Next episode, come back and we will discuss the 2015 Christmas horror film Krampus.
Oh boy.
It's going to be great.
Can't wait.
I can't wait. Oh, so that was Christmas Creeps, everybody, and good night.
Bye.
Good night and good luck.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.